just defining economic justice, and we have all our versions of it, is what's been happening, the caucasity that's been happening for the past hundreds of years.
Ooh, caucasity!
Now, justice requires the inverse.
There you go.
That pendulum has to swing so far towards equity so that eventually we can level
balance out, baby.
Equality. Mm-hmm. So just when we talk about justice, we talk about that pendulum swing and economically what that means for our communities that have been historically excluded on purpose from achieving economic wealth.
Welcome to Voices of the Community, where we explore the issues shaping Northern California. In this episode, we delve into a crucial and timely conversation on economic justice and community placekeeping. Our distinguished panel, introduced by Nafisha Azrial from California for the Arts and moderated by Tamara Ms. T. Sandifer, the CEO and founder of Studio T Arts and Entertainment, will explore the profound impact of economic justice within our arts communities. From gentrification and redlining to the power of ownership and creative entrepreneurship, join us as we uncover the challenges and triumphs faced by artists and cultural leaders dedicated to achieving equity in the arts.
All right. We have an amazing panel coming up. You all want to hear this panel. It's on economic justice and community placekeeping. And it will be moderated by Tamara Ms. T. Sandifer, CEO. Yes. And shout out to her squad that danced at the beginning. We got to see Studio T Arts and Entertainment. So she is the CEO and founder of Studio T Arts and Entertainment, Sacramento-based. Let's welcome our economic justice and community placekeeping panel.
I'm waiting for a hot mic. There you go. The only reason I'm making you clap for us right now is because we're about to go into something real deep. And you may not be pleased with us after we delve into this conversation, but it's a necessary conversation. So go ahead and give us a clap right now. All right, so before we get started, I need you to do something for me. Because again, we're talking about equity. We're talking about economic justice. We're talking about cultural placemaking, making sure that there's equality in the arts realm, especially by way of economy and justice. I need you to do something for me. Stand up, look around, scan the room. I'm giving you 3 seconds. Go fast. Scan the room. All right, now give me your eyes. And while you're giving me your eyes, give me your ears. And while I have your eyes and your ears, I want your heart. You represent leadership and the decision makers in the realm of the arts. There's a mild lack of diversity. Now scan the panel.
Very good.
We represent diversity in the arts. Now, once we start talking, you're going to understand what I mean by that. It's not just because of our skin tones. It's because of the multiple facets that we have to invade in order for us to be able to do arts. So now that we see you and you see us, shall we begin? All right. So I'm going to tell you really quick. They gave us this big old title for this panel. But the first word that sticks out to me is achieving. So before we're going to give you guys options. You get options. We can go as deep, as quick as you want to go. You know, sometimes you step on somebody's toes, they scream, ow. If I'm doing that or if we're doing that, go ahead and say, ooh, ouch.
Ouch.
So we can go as deep as you want to go. But before we start, I would like to introduce our achievers. My name is Ms. T. You can call me Ms. T.
Hi, friends. My name is Nico Kimson. You can call me Nico.
Hi, everyone. My name is Ariana Chavez. You can call me Ariana or Ari.
Hi, everyone. My name is Heather Heslop. You can call me Heather.
What up, everyone? My name is Rashawn Davis. You can call me many a thing. So it depends on how you know me and where you know me from.
All right. So now that we're all on a first name basis, I'm going to ask you a question. Now, think about it before you answer. Think about it. Because, you know, some people, it's a bunch of zealots out there. I say, how deep do you want to go? I want to go real deep, Miss Team. Like, okay. So I'm going to ask you the question, and we're going to be responsive to your answer. How deep you want to go?
Well.
Okay, so just so that you know, one of the big things as it pertains to community, economic justice, it's the collaborative voice. So for those of you that were quiet, you just let a bunch of people make your decision. So now we're going deep. You want to know about us, just so you know, we're not a group of people that Julie met in the line at Taco Bell and said, come and talk to you. You can just scan this little QR code. We do have backgrounds. We be doing stuff. So just make sure you look that up. Just so you know, like, you know, it wasn't like, welcome to McDonald's. May I help you? Can you come and talk to these people? It wasn't like that. All right. So we have all met and we've had some pretty intense conversation. And this panel, it started very differently from what it's become. And one of the key things that came out of some discussion that we had prior, you know, when we were in a Taco Bell line was, you know, place keeping was a key word that came up. So when you talk about economic justice, when you talk about achieving economic justice through community place keeping, you have to first define what is that? So who wants to start? Do it, Nico. I saw you. I saw you. I saw you, Nico.
That's a big stuff.
I saw you.
I'll say what we were talking about backstage, just defining economic justice, and we have all our versions of it, is what's been happening, the caucasity that's been happening for the past hundreds of years.
Ooh, caucasity.
Now, justice requires the inverse.
There you go.
That pendulum has to swing so far towards equity so that eventually we can level
balance out, baby.
Equality. Mm-hmm. So just when we talk about justice, we talk about that pendulum swing and economically what that means for our communities that have been historically excluded on purpose from achieving economic wealth, right? So that's, to me, economic justice. And I'll pass it for community placekeeping.
So placekeeping, I definitely introduced the term because it's been recently introduced to me. And it's in opposition of placemaking, because I feel like placemaking is a buzzword now. Mm-hmm. And for me, it means that a place is being made. We're making space for people that have been historically marginalized or underheard. But the reality is that we've been here. We are here.
Yeah.
And it is our right to keep our position on these lands.
Yeah.
So I think it's efforts that I represent today, Destination Crenshaw, efforts that we are doing to revitalize South LA through arts and culture are all about place keeping, maintaining, and reviving our place in this world.
Awesome. Ro, why don't you jump in here just in the interest of place keeping, because this is super important.
I think to me, place keeping is essential, but it also ties into the economic justice side because, you know, I'll tell you a little story. I went to Richmond, Virginia last year, and one of the things that we did was actually walk into a slave's quarter. How many people have actually walked into slave quarters before? It's very humbling. And you start to realize, like, we were the wealth. We were the wealth. So if you want to talk about economic justice, you have to understand that our bodies were the wealth. Mm-hmm. The fact that if you owned us, we were the wealth. And then you can talk about place keeping because it's not even in this system that we're designed in. It's not even ours to keep in the first place, right? So you have to have both of those conversations at the same time in order for it to happen.
And I think also when you talk about place keeping, now, again, remember that whole ouch thing? If I say it, you can say ouch. This is like an interactive experience. Please, we are not expecting you to just be quiet and bobblehead the whole time. We really want you to engage. Even if it's something along the lines of like, wow, okay, T, that was like right there at the border. Go ahead and throw that out there. Be engaged because this is community. We're all leaders. We're all experts in our craft. We're all intentional. We all have a heart toward what we're doing. So it makes no sense for us to sit up here and talk at you. We want to have a conversation with you about us. So when you say things like placekeeping, immediately what comes to mind is the fact that we don't always have ownership. And one of the most challenging things, I mean, there's a whole push around homelessness, but they're not talking about the homelessness as it pertains to business. There's a lot of arts organizations that became homeless as a result of the trauma and the drama of COVID. So when you talk about placekeeping, immediately what comes to mind is, I want to own my house. I don't want to rent my house. I don't want to lease my house. I don't want to lease a room from you for a week or for a month so I can do my craft. I want to own my house. Because if I own my house, you know what the eventuality will be for everybody that comes after me? They will never have the insecurity of displacement. So when you talk about placekeeping, especially in the realm of economic justice, how much more can you produce when you don't have the concern of where am I going to produce it?
That's a real thing.
How much more impactful can you be when you don't have the stress and pressure of where can I be? So I want to touch that.
Before we move on, I just want to shout out the fact that when we're talking about placemaking and placekeeping, placemaking as a buzzword is very different from the work that has been taking place, has been occurring actively, not just taking place, the advocacy efforts that have been taking place for generations. Mm-hmm. People taking the initiative to fight for a space and a seat at the table. Mm-hmm. I'm here today representing an organization that is in our 37th year.
Awesome.
Shout out to my mama who had the foresight 30 years ago to...
Yeah. Stand up, mom, where are you?
Where you at?
Stand up, mom, where are you?
There's you.
Yes! Thank you.
Had the foresight 30 years ago to understand that Arte Americas, our largest cultural arts center, Latino cultural arts center in the Central Valley, needed to own our property. And so this year I will be making the final mortgage payment.
That's what's up.
I think a point to that, though, in place keeping is, I think the expanded definition of we're talking on seats on boards. Mm-hmm. We're talking on executive positions, mm-hmm. leadership positions. We're talking places that our community can organize and gather. We're talking studio spaces, dance studios, mm-hmm. right? We're talking for general events for the general public and community. So I think when we think place making, it is ever expansive. And the dream is, and why it was not supposed to happen, because we know democracy thrives and communities can self-organize, right, in democratized in spaces. And so I think that's, we've seen these jurisdictions, these laws, these policies. We talk about lowriders in Sonoma County. We're not allowed to do gatherings of more than two cars, right? Because then it would be illegal, right? Because what happens if this community self-organizes? What could they do to policy, to right? Uh-huh. So literally, we have been written in law out of place making, place keeping. So what is it now to nudge your way into executive position boards to change policies that then allow our communities to self-organize and gather and eventually lead to greater liberation for us, right?
Yeah. And then consider something. When we were initially having this conversation and talking about placekeeping, here's some words that came up. Gentrification. Redlining. And I said, y'all, we can't bring this up with the people. They're here for some art. Here for some art. But how can we really talk about art when there's a bigger issue? Where? So when we examine the communities that we populate, one of the most challenging things is, where is our place? Like, okay, we can do, you know, in the park, or we can do in the urban housing community, or we can do in, you know, churches, or maybe after school programs, if they let us do a program. But where is our place? Always floating around. Like, where is our place? So it says achieving economic justice. I want to talk about how do we, you know, and I really think we're just scratching the surface of it now. How do we achieve economic justice through the arts?
Is anybody familiar with Dr. Mindy Fuller's Root Shot book? Raise your hand. No. Okay. I got one in the front. So we got a few. She really explores the profound trauma that a people experience when a community, a place where they live is demolished, quite literally demolished. And we know that has happened in communities, black, brown communities for the centuries, having communities bulldozed for lakes or for parks or for metro stations or metro lines.
Stadiums.
And so that, like, our response with Destination Crenshaw is, like, moving
to repair the root shock. And being leaders, like, it's coming. The gentrification train is coming. But finding, keeping our place, finding our place on that train and directing and steering it so that we create or recreate green spaces, communal gathering spaces where you can walk outside and see and be inspired by artists who are of your community, from your community, and really see what's possible for you. So I think, you know, really reframing how the arts and culture can really meet the needs of these changing communities and our desire to stay. I think it's core to how we do it successfully, because people have been trying, like you said, for years. The pendulum was doing that and it was unsuccessful.
And I love that you said the desire to stay. I think most often displacement can happen because sometimes we let it happen, and there has to be a desire to stay. And then I also like that you said the plan. What's the plan? How do you service through the arts? I could tell you, you know, over COVID, we went from one dance company to seven companies that we had to do wraparound services. So anywhere from food provision to clothing provision to, yes, we're doing creative movement, but now we have to add technological aspects of things so that they're taking their artistry and now it's digital and virtual and going across the world. So all of these different components were necessary components, not to push the edge up, but to just sustain during a very difficult time that no one could define. So the desire to stay in the game had to overshadow the desire to, like, God, this is really hard. Like, this is like hard. And then you hear the narrative. Julie told you all the statistics. You hear the narrative like, okay, but you're an artist. And let me help everybody real quick. I never subscribe to the starving artist thing. Never. I don't want to be hungry and be trying to dance somewhere. Passing out on the stage.
That's right. That's right.
I ain't doing that. Like, I don't know who thought that up, but I'm not pushing the subscribe button on that mess. So again, when you talk about economic justice, again, having the desire to stay, to stand. Like, no, I'm going to stay on this side of the pay scale. My desire is to never be on this side because it's not enough. So my desire is to stay over here. So I'm going to stay over here. Well, you know, you're the only one over there, but that's okay. Because eventually these people are going to get hungry and they're going to come and join me.
And having the willpower to push forward, because it's not easy. It's not
an
easy undertaking to, I mean, in the whole spectrum of economic justice, there's spatial justice, there's digital justice, which you kind of alluded to over COVID. I mean, a lot of work that Destination Crenshaw was doing over COVID, we couldn't be in construction.
Right.
Artists can create, but the businesses in the community needed support to maintain and stay afloat. Because at the end of the day, when these parks open, it's about really funneling that, all of that commerce and commercialism back into legacy business in the communities. But we had to sustain them through those troubled times.
Can I offer, like, two tips that I think are helpful in economic justice conversation? Raise your hand if folks here hire artists, pay artists, are funding organizations, or have grants. Raise your hand here if you got some money. Okay, well, I better get some of that. Okay. Kwong Ni, look at the program. B, I'll say, let's be real. Your job, our job, is wealth redistribution.
Yeah, there you go.
We are here to redistribute
equitably
to the communities that have been left out of the conversation.
Yep.
Make your money move, spend it down, right? So when people are like, oh, what do? I can make money move real well.
There you go.
I can help you spend your money real well.
There you go.
Right? Give me that credit card. That's what I do, right? In the communities that are disinvested in. And so I think wealth redistribution, if that is your frame and your mindset, how can I spend these dollars down, right? And then B, through community self-determination. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear another whiteboard talk about, I think this is what we should be doing. I'm like, hey, I don't know if I need that.
You gotta say ouch. Don't be mad. Don't. Just say ouch. He said it. I didn't say it. Don't text me. Just be like, ouch. Just be like, ouch. Because he said it. It's true, though.
Just saying. Community self-determination. We did a community-led arts funding strategy for community grant making, $500,000 from the Hewlett Foundation. We led a year and a half of community listening. with these asesores, these advisors, and basically they came back and said, oh, well, we know how to spend money. We know what we need, our community needs. We need places to gather. We need funding. We need professional development. And we need health and wellness. Boom, cat. And these are the diversity of what they provide as the menu items, what they need could never have been touched by a board that was not with working within the community, right? Yep. So those are the two tips I have is make your money move, redistribute those funds, right? And because here's what I think. I talk to foundations all the time. This isn't your money. Why are you so fickle? This isn't your money. Spend the money. This is taxpayer dollars. Spend the money, honey.
Let's go.
Let's go. Anyway, that's my rant.
We do know how to spend it.
We know how to spend it.
Pathways, creative jobs, that is the key, creating and redistributing the wealth within the community to artists of the community, to businesses in the community.
Well, Sean, I'm coming at you.
I was going to say, the thing that I'm just going to point you, because I went down on the resume and the website, is what happens with our communities is you set up one artist, one person with wealth, they're going to spread that to their community, right? Yeah. So it's not just one artist.
Yes.
It's a household. It's a family. It's an entire ecosystem and community. Mm-hmm. And that's the work that you're really about.
Well, wait for it. Yeah. Wait for it.
Wait for it.
I'm coming at you. It's your quarterback about to throw you a play. It's a good play. You ready?
I'm ready.
What are some of the examples of successful community-driven development initiatives that have leveraged arts and culture to address economic disparities? All right.
No pressure. Yeah, that's a good question. I think for me, it's just like what we do. The word that came up while you were talking was survival. Like, I think that's so core to who we are as creatives. And we allow for folks to call us creatives, but truly it's just who we are.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And so like, it's just so embedded.
Yep.
That it's not until we get into rooms like this and we see other people call us other things that it's like, oh, I guess, well, I am a creative. Yeah, I do have solutions and I am achieving things like, you know, for us, it was just about seeing the homies shine, right? And seeing like the homies who are really dope at what they do and be like, you know, you can make money from that.
There you go, baby.
Right?
There you go.
And then them being like, really? And then having to pour into them and say like, yeah, you can definitely make money from that. Let me connect you with a community. And then so you have a market start. And then a market starts, which then bustles into 3,000 people coming into a neighborhood to kick it, hang, chill. And I think that's one of the big things that always goes unnoticed when we're having these conversations is there's a language barrier.
Yes.
People in the streets do not talk like people in this room. People in this room don't talk like people in the street. Some of us in here can cross over. Raise your hands if you're a crossover.
I'm a super crossover.
Exactly.
I totally cross over all the time.
We know how to do it. But when you're talking about connecting those communities, it's like that is the big piece that I feel like always gets left out of the conversation. And so when we look at it and we just say like, all right, we want the homies to make money, we create a market or we create a storefront. We're going on 10 years in our storefront, and we've literally only held California makers. In the whole 10 years, California makers and designers, no one else. People down the block, they host stuff from China and other places. We won't talk about that. We'll just keep it on us. You know what I mean? Yes, we'll just keep it on us. Only California makers for 10 years. We're going on 10 years. But there's the other piece, which is now the ownership piece. And the equity piece, I think, is another kind of place where we have to get to like what equity really means. And equity is fake. When you think about it, it's fake. And I didn't really understand that until I owned a house. That was the first time I really understood what equity is. It's like if I pay mortgage here for years and years and years, I can pull $200,000 out of the air and then I can use that for something real. That's a whole different ball game that people have been involved in for hella long. But if we're not having that conversation about what equity really, really is in that sense, we can say the words all the time, but it really is ownership. Mm-hmm. And so that's the next piece is like, you know, for culture, we just secured 5 parcels along a corridor here in Sacramento. So we can start with community ownership and we're building out. Yeah. Thank you for that. Because it took 4 years to have multiple different conversations to put it together.
Yeah.
Right. And it's right down the block from
here. We're neighbors.
So
I just bought 36,000 square feet. I bought an entire city block right up the street from his block. We tried to be stealthy with it, but I already told that, you know, I told the city, I'm like, y'all, look, I apologize ahead of time. You are in trouble. You done tripped up and put us next to each other.
But here we go.
Yeah. So I think that's it. You know, it's like those are those real life examples. But I think those real life examples exist in every city you're from. Mm. It's just what you're paying attention to, what you are talking about in the rooms you're in, and then the disconnect from actually happening in the community. I can slide to any city and connect with my folks and we can be good. Just like anybody can fly into here and sit in this room, like I can do the same thing in multiple cities.
Yes.
Because we have a community and yes. a base. Yep. It's just not connected to this top level. Mm-hmm. And once I started to understand that during the pandemic, it's like, oh, this thing goes wide and
there
high.
You go. There you go.
Ayana, do you want to jump in here, baby?
Yeah, I really want to jump in on the vocab piece. You saw me getting excited.
When she starts fidgeting, you all just brace yourselves. I'm giving you a heads up. She has something to share. Just buckle your seatbelts.
Thank you. I spent the first decade of my career really focused on arts education and museum education. And I did most of that work in Sunset Park, Brooklyn, in a neighborhood that has always been a working class immigrant neighborhood that is, you know, in the violent throes of gentrification right now. And when we think about all of these different experiences that we have on any given day, there's a lot going on, right? You can feel when a neighborhood is changing. Everyone can feel that. But if you don't have the language to connect to that experience, then you can't participate in any advocacy efforts to stand your ground, right? To maintain your home or to advocate for yourself really in any way. And so when we're thinking about, I'm thinking about everyone here who is in a position to redistribute wealth and to share wealth. And I really hope that you will be intentional about explaining to people where these funds came from, how you got them, and how you ended up in a position to redistribute them. Because if they don't understand where those funds are coming from year after year, then they're just going to be hoping that you decide to be nice and you decide to share what you have when they could join you, right? They could be doing that work right alongside with you if they understand how to support you so that we can all advocate together.
Yeah, it's like wealth distribution and information distribution.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
The same access to information so that we can all take that path.
But that's wealth. Yeah, and that's I like that you said if you know the vernacular of the realm that has the resources, then you can crack the code to get the access to it. Most often, language is used as a weapon against people. And so it's not that the stuff is not there. It's not even that you can't pull up a seat to any table you want. What you gonna talk about when you get to the table? Are they gonna talk around you? Are they gonna talk about you? Are you even gonna understand the words that they're saying and how you can apply it to your situation and then activate in a space so that you can get the resources you need to be a success? You don't even know the language of success as it pertains to economic justice. It's a naughty word that Black people have to use because they feel bad about how they're getting treated. Wrong. It's a truth in society as it pertains to people who don't have the fullness of understanding linguistically or in practice of how to get what they need to succeed. It's not a Black thing. It's not a color thing. It's a human thing, and it's a lack of connection, education, and ownership thing. Period.
As our panelists continue to shed light on the intersection of economic justice and community placekeeping, it's clear that the arts play a pivotal role in shaping equitable futures. But before we dive deeper into these crucial conversations, let's take a moment to acknowledge our generous sponsors who make these discussions possible. Stay tuned, because coming up next, our co-host Eduardo Robles will bring you an insightful interview with one of our panelists, Heather Hislop, the Director of Public Art Programs at Destination Crenshaw. We'll be right back. Voices of the Community is made possible by generous support from the Zellerbach Family Foundation, dedicated to ensuring vibrant work is created, new voices celebrated, and diverse communities have opportunities to thrive. Learn more at zff.org. We're also supported by the Peaceful World Foundation, fostering a culture of global peace through hosted conversations and education. Discover more at peacefulworldfoundation.org. Before we return to our panel on achieving economic justice through community placekeeping, enjoy a one-on-one interview with one of our panelists, Heather Hislop, the Director of Public Art Programs at Destination Crenshaw. Hosted by Eduardo Robles, Heather shares her efforts to empower communities, ensuring they are heard, valued, and equipped to thrive. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Eduardo Robles with Californians for the Arts and Voices of the Community here at the second annual California Arts and Culture Summit in Sacramento, California. I'm here with Heather Hislop.
Hey.
Hi,
nice Heather. Be here. Thank you, Eduardo.
We just got out of the panel, Achieving Economic Justice Through Community Placekeeping, important, valuable work, much needed work, especially we're empowering communities, especially underserved, underprivileged.
Systemically oppressed.
Systemically oppressed yes. communities.
Yeah.
But there's a proof of concept, right, of how to empower, you know, these kind of, these communities that have been harmed systemically. Mm-hmm. And I want you to talk about some of these kind of strategies that you and other panelists.
Yeah. First of all, it was just a great honor to participate in the panel. I have an arts administrative background that spans from arts education to now public art through my work with Destination Crenshaw. And when I was first approached about, you know, economic justice and went through several name iterations, but thinking of the work of arts and culture in support of economic justice is relatively new. But as I worked with the other panelists who are amazing, I was quite frankly intimidated. I realized that there are so many through lines in the work that we are doing collectively across the state to empower, uplift, and ensure the communities that we are working with know that they're heard and that they matter and that we are working with them to ensure that they stay where they are. That's the idea of place keeping rather than place making. From my perspective, the places have already been made. It's about making sure we have the resources, the education and the understanding and the tools to stay there and to thrive where we're planted. At Destination Crenshaw, our motto is grow where you're planted. Our community members have been planted in the Crenshaw District, for example, 40, 50 plus years, right? And then some. So we aren't making a place. The place is made. We are reemerging in that. And I think it's just beautiful how we can all come together and find through lines and similarities in communities across this great, vast state to really move forward.
Yeah. And a topic in the panel was this intergenerational leadership. As you mentioned, these are places that have a cultural richness. And it's just this leadership that needs to kind of step up and, you know, advocate and build business models and, you know, apply all of. So can you speak a little bit more on kind of like all of the moving parts needed and maybe some shared methodologies with some of the folks you were in the panel today?
Yeah, I think some of our shared methodologies would include, I guess, when I think of economic development, I think of, can you eat? Do you have your basic needs met? Then you can really flourish and thrive in creativity or through the arts in any kind of way. And I think that's the through line is like, how do we use the arts and culture? How all the panelists use the arts and culture as a tool for thriving and developing access to broadband internet, which is something that Destination Crenshaw is advocating for. We're an arts organization. You wouldn't think that, but because we are living and working in that community, we experience connectivity issues that our community members are experiencing. So that then becomes a part of our work. How do we develop workforce development beyond maybe just construction or your standard workforce development programs? How do we create workforce development programs in creative economy? So engaging and commissioning artists and really creating pipelines, maybe from construction or maintenance career into collections care. Because there are very clear through lines that people just don't know of. I like to say I have an arts management or arts administration background. So I'm a little bit privileged in what I had access to, But I did not know about the collections care and conservation field as a viable field for me. And only 3% of conservators in California are Black. So that's another whole new pipeline that we are hoping to open up. Just like some of my panelists, they're opening up housing pipelines, really just paving ways for people to flourish and get their basic needs met, as well as explore, you know, their avenues in the arts and creativity.
So we saw, you know, the artwork is economic work, you know, mm-hmm. throughout the 2010s, placekeeping, you know, and so is this, you know, the next iteration, this placekeeping? What are the nuances?
I mean, words shift just like time. I think one of my colleagues, Nico, was saying it's like a pendulum. It goes back and forth. So placekeeping is we're elevating instead of what's been placemaking. But it's the same idea. Create a space, making space for us at the table, making literal space for us in these communities. If there's no green space, things like that. And then taking it one step further and owning that, again, we've been here. So we're keeping our place. Not only should we have a place, we need to make places at tables that we historically don't exist at. But when those tables are starting to impact our communities, those people who are at those sitting at those tables come into our community trying to rearrange things. It's that effort to keep our place and elevate to meet the need of our communities.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. Yes. You know, just how we are, you know, making sense of how artwork across sectors is just key, you know, to basically to empower, to thrive. Well, thank you so much, you know, for, you know, taking the time to talk to us. And yeah, we were so happy to see you.
Welcome back. Let's dive into the second half of our panel on achieving economic justice through community placekeeping, led by Tamara Miss T. Sandifer of Studio T Arts and Entertainment, with our panelists Ariana Chavez of Arte Americas, Roshan Davis of CLTRE and Unseen Heroes, Heather Hislop of Destination Crenshaw, and Nico Kimson of Kimson Creative. Join us as they discuss ownership, community empowerment, and wealth distribution in the face of gentrification and displacement. This is a conversation you won't want to miss.
I want to chime in and bring it back to like the arts and why the arts are uniquely suited to help us solve this problem.
All right, Nico, let us have it. Let us have it.
I work with a lot of governmental organizations, agencies, jurisdictions, and basically we use this framework of art as data collection, right? Mm-hmm. We know artists are living in the future. So we work with...
Hold on a second. You can't just say that and then just like talk about Twinkies.
We know.
No. Say that again.
Artists are living in the future.
Say it again.
Artists are living in the future. Am I right?
Say it again.
Mama, we are.
Say it again.
Artists are living.
Say it until they get it, because that was a mild clap. They're not getting it.
The dreamers of this new future.
In unison, everybody.
Yeah. You guys got to understand that. I like you. I like you. 100%. You got to understand what he just said. He just gave you gold. And if you can understand what he just said, you can monetize what he just said. The whole world looked to creativity and the arts when the entire world shut down. Mm-hmm. Artists are living in the future. That means you can monetize everything you are and everything you do. Go ahead and finish, baby.
No, I got wrapped up in the TED Talk. I was like... Not only are artists living in the future, artists are the ones that are going to build the future, right? So if you're smart, partner with an artist, because here's the thing. I work with city governments that are building 30-year strategic plans of how the city will grow infrastructurally for the next 30 years. And you're going to tell me you're going to get all that data through a survey? So we partner them with local artists who go off and lead artist workshops, right, that allow us build the container. Artists build the container for us to self-regulate our communities and provide the container to freedom dream. When I talk about economic justice in a 30-year plan, what does that mean for BIPOC youth in the city of Santa Rosa, right? And then by the end of this hour and a half, you're going to have this beautiful data that says, mm-hmm. I want access to green space, organic mm-hmm. vegetables. I want my houses to look like this. I want to look like mm-hmm. this. I want to look, that you could never get with a survey or what I just call boo-boo kitty community engagement plans, right?
Yeah.
So artists are the ones that are going to build a container for our community to dream in. And we're going to be the ones to help relay and vision with folks that are building infrastructure that could either include us or exclude us, right?
Yeah.
So we are the ones that are going to be building those futures. So partner with, we have that power, right? Because we don't see ourselves in the present, so we have to see ourselves in the future.
Ha-ha.
So join us in the future and give us the money to help that future.
Would you stop? Hold on a second. You got to hear what he just said. If you guys don't listen to me, listen to me. We don't see ourselves in the present. Did you hear everything Julie said? We don't see ourselves in our fullness in the present. If we don't fight to realize ourselves in fullness in the future, you are a solution to a very real world global problem. Mm-hmm. The answer is in this room.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He's saying stuff, and isn't he so engaging to me? It's so fun to watch, but he's saying something to you. The hope is that you're not, some things they can be taught, but then there are things that they have to be caught. You're not going to get the fullness of it, but get the impartation that's happening. Just let it absorb into your pores and every fiber of your being so that you walk out of here. You're talking about economic justice. What if the economic justice is you realizing the great wealth in you that comes through you simply because you're you. And you're just you going someplace to happen. You're bringing future solutions. You're prevention. We spend a lot of time playing defense. How do we get on the front end of this and do some prevention work?
Yes.
That's who you are.
Yes.
Okay, y'all got us fired up here. I mean, we real fired up. You should have saw us on our Zoom call, though. It was the Justice League. All right, so go ahead, baby, go.
I did just want to add, I really appreciate, coming back to the artists, and in particular the artists and the creatives in this room, because a lot of my work, I have a background in arts education, too, so my public art, spanning the arts diaspora, so to speak, it's largely with communities, and I find that the power is within them as well.
Yeah.
So if you have not tapped into community members that you are serving, that you are working with, then you are missing a large, large piece of the solution to your problems.
See.
The solution to creating real economic justice. Destination Crenshaw has been a project 10 years in the making. And the first 5 was all about talking to the community.
There you go.
The name a community member on the advisory committee came up with. The design of the parks a community member came up with.
Mm-hmm.
What they need, like you said, it is data. Having these conversations, they're artists, they're creatives. The creative economy in LA in particular, the largest percentage comes from South LA, that Crenshaw region.
Yeah.
So it already exists. What I'm telling you is it exists. The answers, the solutions exist within your community.
Yeah.
Tap into them.
Yeah.
Stop ignoring them just because they don't have the language. Help them.
Yes.
Understand that language.
I just want to double click on that, on what you just said.
Double click.
You're talking about talking to people.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. Go have a conversation. Yes, there's a time and a place for a survey and complex analysis. I'm not saying to throw it all out the window, but you don't always need to create a super dynamic and elaborate system, right? You can talk to people and you can get the information that you need because you'll find out what they need.
Right. And then Julie talked to us at the line at Taco Bell and here we are.
And here we are.
No, but seriousness, the conversation that happens, I can offer that the great majority of the programs we offer, and just so that you're aware, Sacramento is now our headquarters. We populate the entire state of California and we're across the country, targeting communities like
Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Philadelphia, Harlem, New York, mm-hmm. and Atlanta, Georgia. That's what my company does. Youth in the largest school districts is who we get engaged with. 23 programs dealing with over 200,000 youth and their families in the course of an academic school year. Our programs were designed, developed, tested, and fortified, and practiced, and realized just because we listened when they talk. Miss T, I really want to take this dance class, but I'm hungry. Miss T, I really want to do this dance class, but it's raining outside and I don't have a coat yet. Miss T, I really, really, really want to make a movie, but I don't even have a cell phone. Where do I start? So the great majority of what we do that some people call a success is simply listening when people talk. And if you are serving a community, if you're in the arts, that's what we do, they will always tell you what they need. It's hot. Oh, okay. We got to check out that AC.
Okay. So I have a question.
Let's go, baby.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so we heard infrastructure in order to do stuff. We heard language.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I'm seeing is you've got all this money, you've got all these nonprofits.
Right.
You've got all these arts. And so you've got money flowing to nonprofits.
Crazy.
And you've got arts. You've got money flowing to
nonprofits.
Mm-hmm. In an idea of redistribution, what would you think about training up like small groups of artists who have like interests to become nonprofits?
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
How would that be a structure that can function in this money flow?
Or yes and. Well, yes and. I will offer, yes, and yeah, I have a nonprofit, but I also have a for-profit.
Ding, ding, ding. Ding, ding, ding.
Because what I didn't want my mentees, the people that I'm grooming in the things of economics, to think that they could only survive if they got a grant. So yes, and. Yes, and. How about just business? How about entrepreneurship? How about arts plus entrepreneurship?
Mm-hmm.
Arts plus business models. Arts plus entrepreneurship, business model, and do it here for as long as you need to. Grow.
Owner, sir.
Yeah, I think it's one of those there's a buffet. And the 501c3 nonprofit is one of them that I think it's just a tax status, but it's not a mindset, right? I make this year, Kim's Incredible have been in business for 3 years. We'll have moved over $1 million directly to artists, right?
Okay, that's a clap.
Tell me about, right? I'm an LLC. I am not a 501c3 nonprofit, right? I think people from our shared experiences, I have been used, abused, silenced within the nonprofit industrial complex, and I no longer.
Yes.
I'm going to get mine, and my community is going to get
there
theirs through my LLC.
There you go. So then,
yes.
Then I have a question for you, sweetie, just because, number one, I love your bravery. Though brave people change the world. So my question for you is, do you have a nonprofit?
I don't. Organization start nonprofits because they didn't know how to
do it. Is there anybody in this room who needs help starting or building their nonprofit? Raise your hand. You have a mentor.
Sign her up.
And that's how economic justice in community works.
In real time.
Live demonstration.
In real time.
And just so you know, we've been best friends for 20 years. We planned this whole thing. Just kidding.
Just kidding.
Just kidding. I'm just kidding. But I do want to know your name. Shout it, Mama.
Margaret Cameron.
Thank you.
Thank you, Margaret.
Holler at Margaret.
And I did say in the beginning of all of this, look, this is a conversation. We don't want to throw information at you. We want to get to the bottom of some things so that we can grow together. Right. And this is not math class. I see your hand. Margaret was just like, yo, I got something. So you just shout that right on out, baby. I'm not a science teacher. I'll look at your hand all day long and wondering if you all right. You all right? You stretching it out? Nice and loud, sweet pea.
I'm 22 years old. I started as a painter first. And stepping into organizing, like I'm learning to speak a different language.
Uh-huh.
barely used to. And I want to empower other artists to step into that realm. But I guess I'm trying to find this balance of, like, what advice do I give to other artists in learning to kind of spin that dopamine page? And how do I stay true to my art along the way, staying true to being an artist and not within the organization?
Take it. You guys want to take it?
I kind of want to.
Will you just say the question out loud for the rest of the group, just because it was a little... Would you mind saying the question?
Yeah, so ultimately, you're an artist, you're a painter, you want to help other people who want to get started in it. How do you do that and maintain your level of balance?
And organize.
Organizing. And how do you do that while maintaining efficacy in your creativity? Oh, okay.
Double speak. Yeah, I don't think it's, I mean, feel free to disagree with me. I don't think that it's either or. I think that when you're code switching, when you are flowing back and forth between different languages, you're always 100% wholly yourself. Mm-hmm. And any information that you have, you should share.
Yeah.
So I think we first need to just shake off this idea that you're not being true to yourself if you're speaking in a different way than you're used to. Because this is the water that we're swimming in. Mm-hmm. This is the landscape that we're in. And these are the tools and the words that we need to have in order to navigate these troubled waters.
Does that help you, sweetie?
And I would say give yourself grace. Jump in on
say that again, Heather.
As you develop yourself. You don't have to have all the answers right now. You learn, you grow, you share, and then more people learn and grow, and you do it together.
Yeah. I think my answer to that is, like, really understanding what creativity really is at the core of it. You know, I have this conversation with the homies all the time. Is like, if you would have asked me when I was in my 20s, I'd have told you I'm an MC and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I used to stand in front of crowds 100 times as big and perform my art. Mm-hmm. Right? But then when that became an economic thing, I started a business around it. And then I had to learn that as well.
Mm.
And then going into another realm, now I'm doing something different where I'm looking at developing community and it's all a flow. But what I started to understand is when I pull back and I let creativity just flow through,
there you go.
It's not just art. It's not just business. It's so much more.
Yeah.
Because this small little vessel of the way that we're looking through it is like, an artist or an MC, that scope goes way bigger. And that's your power at the end of the day. Right now, you're just using the paintbrush around it. Mm-hmm. But it could be teaching folks to code switch as you do. Because that's what I've had to do the last 4 years. It's been like, yo, they talk whole differently over here. Let me create a glossary and then pass it to the homies. Right? So when you're in that and you have that awareness, that consciousness of being able to see it, that's actually your true creativity. And if you can hold that, that grows so far. You know what I mean? So don't just limit yourself to being an artist.
Yeah. All right. So I know that you all just saw the lovely lady walk down the aisle and she did like this. She wasn't saying like, high five, T, you're doing great. That's not what she meant. She was like, you need to wrap up. Okay. So I'm like, all right, I got it. But you did give me a hot mic. Don't ever give T a hot mic. So we got 5 minutes and I want to do something just so that we can land. I know that we're flying high together. I can see that you're absorbing and that you're processing and that you're getting it. And I understand that because now you're asking questions and you have, you're engaging in a way that it's not like lecture style. You're actually involved. And I think that's wonderful. So I want to do something really quickly. We're going to take 2 minutes. And there's no rhyme reason. I'm not going to point at you. Don't. This is not math class. I will think you are stretching. Do not raise your hand. I just want you to shout out one word. Come on. Tell me what you've learned. There you go. Come on. Tell me something. Come on. What can you do? There you go. Come on. Keep going. Come on. Shout it. Come on. Yeah. You getting quiet. I don't hear anybody up here. Yes. Keep going. You know what the problem is with growth and change is sometimes you start, but you don't keep going. I just gifted you permission to be present and for your voice to be heard. Shout one word. There you go.
So there is a difference between good and great. The difference between good and great is good people start. Great people finish. And they make a lot of noise while they're doing it. So as you can see, we're in a room full of great people whose gift and talent is necessary for what's to come. So first of all, thank you, Californians for the Arts, for creating space, for the fight, for teaching us how to fight, for gifting us the vernacular so we can show up in atmospheres where we can cause real change. Clap for that. Yes. Okay. And so just because we can say we're like a panelist and we did panelist stuff, I am going to ask that you all take up the same assignment. One word. Give me one word so that we can exit strong together and release everybody into their future.
Culture.
Freedom.
Share.
Transformative relationships.
That's the word.
I cheated.
You just changed the language. So I see you.
Relationships.
And mine is stand. And sometimes you don't got nothing left. But if you can just stand. Mm-hmm. I'm of the learning that you stand there for until you get what you're standing there for. Having done all to stand, stand. Thank you.
As we close out our third episode featuring highlights from the California Arts and Culture Summit, we want to thank our co-hosts, Nafisha Azriel and Eduardo Robles of California for the Arts, along with our panel moderator, Tamara Misty Sandifer, the CEO and founder of Studio T Arts and Entertainment. We also extend our gratitude to our panelists, Ariana Chavez, Executive Director at Arte Americas, Roshan Davis, Executive Director of CLTRE and co-founder of Unseen Heroes, Heather Hislop, Director of Public Arts at Destination Crenshaw, and Nico Kemsen, CEO and Lead Consultant at Kemsen Creative. Want to learn more about our guests and their impactful work? Visit voicesofthecommunity.com for full bios, links to their organizations, and ways to get involved. Simply click on Where Art Meets Impact and then Episode 3, Voices of Change, the intersection of art, equity, and economic empowerment. While you're there, explore more in-depth interviews and stories from the Arts and Culture series, sign up for our newsletter to stay connected, and consider donating or volunteering to support our vibrant arts community. Join us next time for insights from the California Art and Culture Summit's panel on building a sustainable creative workforce. Today's episode was made possible through our co-production partnership with California for the Arts at their second annual California Arts and Culture Summit. Special thanks to our technical crew, audio and video wizard Eric Estrada, and our production partner Bayvac Media and their team Paula Argoni, Andy Konami, Javon Giles, and Clay Goh. Thanks to Casey Nance from Citron Studios for the graphics magic. A special thanks to our broadcast partners who help share these important conversations. KSFP LPFM in San Francisco, KPCA LPFM in Petaluma, Petaluma Community Public Access TV, and Bayvac Media's SF Commons Public Access TV. Thank you for your commitment to amplifying diverse voices and perspectives. Please support these partners and our mission by tuning in and spreading the word. Voices of the Community is made possible by generous support from the Zellerbach Family Foundation, dedicated to ensuring vibrant work is created, new voices celebrated, and diverse communities have opportunities to thrive. Learn more at zff.org. We're also supported by the Peaceful World Foundation, fostering a culture of global peace through hosted conversations and education. Discover more at peacefulworldfoundation.org. And we love your support to continue to make shows just like this one. Go to georgecoster.com and click on the donate button. Take Voices of the Community with you on the go. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. Enjoying the show? Please rate and review us. It helps more people discover these important stories. watch past and future episodes on YouTube by searching for Geo Koster. Have feedback or ideas? We'd love to hear from you. Email george@georgekoster.com. I'm George Koster from San Francisco. On behalf of our team, thank you for joining us. Until next time, remember, your voice matters.